But if you can't imagine comics without superpowers, there are plenty of them in Austin Grossman's Soon I Will Be Invincible. Here's how it begins.
This morning on planet Earth, there are 1,686 enhanced, gifted, or otherwise superpowered persons. Of these, 126 are civilians, leading basically normal lives. 226 are aquatic, confined to the oceans. 25 are microscopic, including the infinitesimal 7. 3 are dogs. 4 are cats. 1 is a bird. 678 use their powers to fight crime, while 441 use their powers to commit them. 44 of these are currently confined in special containment facilities for enhanced criminals. Of these last, it is interesting to note that an unusually high proportion have IQs of 300 or more, 18 to be exact, including me.
Austin Grossman designs games and writes about comics. He's also written one in the form of a novel called Soon I Will Be Invincible. Here's a brief excerpt from the same character who gives voice to the book's title. I'm just going to let Dr. Impossible speak for himself.
I am not a criminal. I didn't steal a car, I didn't sell heroin or steal an old lady's purse. I built a quantum fusion reactor in 1978, an orbital plasma gun in 1980, and a giant laser-eyed robot in 1984. I tried to conquer the world and almost succeeded 12 times in counting. I'm the smartest man in the world. Once, I wore a cape in public and fought battles against men who could fly, who had metal skin, who could kill you with their eyes. Now, I have to wonder whether the smartest man in the world has done the smartest thing he could with his life. See, all superheroes have an origin. They make a big deal out of it. The story that got them their powers and their mission. Bitten by a radioactive bug, they fight crime. Visited by wandering cosmic gods, they search for a lost tablet of so-and-so and avenge their dead families. When you threaten to crash an asteroid into your own planet, just so they'll give you $1 billion, or substitute your face for the Mona Lisa, there's no statute of limitations. So you have to have the courage of your convictions. You should have a nemesis. You need an obsession. And you need something else. I don't know precisely what it is. A reason. A girl you couldn't get. Parents slain before your eyes. A nagging grudge against the world. It could be anything. I really don't know what it is, this thing that makes you evil, but it does.
It begins when a story we're all familiar with ends, and the main antagonist is sort of shuffled off stage, as he always is. That, in a way, is the moment when he sort of begins his thoughtful life. Now he begins to think, now he begins to reflect, and therein begins the tale. He's sort of mid-career. As the book begins. Yeah. He's a cartoon mad scientist in a way, but he's just starting to sort of suspect, or awareness is creeping in, that he is a cartoon mad scientist. And what exactly is he doing with himself?
Well, let's talk about this a little bit. He is a cartoon mad scientist. He is a comic book character. And the question you must get asked a lot is, if you're going to write a comic book, why not write a comic book? Why write a novel?
I guess I wanted more from comics than just what was in the pictures. I love comics, and I wanted to sort of enrich the experience. I wanted to sort of, by taking away sight, you sort of expand the senses, right? I wanted to feel what it was like to live inside a superpowered body, to sort of eat breakfast with these people, to sort of, you know, notice how they stood, how they walked, how they smelled, the timbre of their voices, all of the sensory input that goes into sort of superpowered life. I wanted to draw on all of it instead of sort of privileging the visual. And that's the great device of the novel. It gets us into that gritty quotidian life. And I really, really wanted to see what superhero life and supervillain life sort of looked like through that lens.
Of course, anybody who has lived in America within the past 50 or 60 years has a pretty good idea of what a superhero looks like anyway, don't they? They're all bulging muscles and sleek in a way that very few real human beings are. So I suppose in some ways you don't need the pictures.
Right, you can kind of sketch that in and let everybody sort of fill that in and then sort of build on that or enrich that.
Well, let's start with Dr. Impossible. Who is this guy?
Dr. Impossible is what you might call a sort of uber nerd. He's really, really smart and really, really frustrated. I sort of drew on my experience in graduate school to construct him. He's really smart, and yet he just can't believe he's such a loser. He can't believe he loses every time. And he wants to take over the world.
And he's tried several times.
So he's tried 12 times, in fact. I'm not sure that he knows what he would do with the world were he actually to take it over. But he knows that this is what he really wants.
Yeah. Just give me an example of the ways in which he has tried to take over the world.
I tried to think of everything a supervillain could possibly do over the arc of a considerable career. So I thought of the robot army, and then I thought of the dinosaur army, and then the fish army, the fungus army, the weasel army, and insect army, alien invasions, stealing the gold in Fort Knox, which is always some kind of ticket to world domination, even though it's sort of unclear at that point economically what happens. I thought about time travel, doomsday devices, mind control, because these villains sort of try everything. They're wonderfully sort of perversely inventive personalities, which I think is what makes them so much more fascinating than the heroes who just sort of show up on cue to smash it all up.
Because it also sounds to me as though you must have read a number of comic books to come up with this number of failed attempts to take over the world.
I think it's safe to say that, yes, I have read a number of comic books. I think I began on superheroes, I think it was the Hanna-Barbera Super Friends animated series in the early 1970s.
That was kind of a spin-off of the Justice League, wasn't it? I mean, that's...
Right, it was a spin-off and almost a kind of sanitization there.
In fact, you have drawn on this. You have quite a list of characters in Soon I Will Be Invincible. You don't stop with Dr. Impossible and Fatale. You have a whole bunch, including a kind of Batman character, the one who isn't super except by virtue of practicing so hard.
Right, the unpowered superhero. I had to have one of those because I wanted to have all the types in there. I sort of twisted him a little bit by making him a little bit autistic in his background. And I had the idea of somebody who just sort of compulsively thinks all the time about how to beat up whoever's nearest to them, just in case it should come up.
Fatale is the one who is more human. She's your other tale-teller here, but it was kind of a modified human being.
She's our kind of ticket into that world. She's the rookie joining the team. She's part machine, and she has the superpowers already. She's more trying to figure out how to be a superhero.
4 years ago, I decided to start calling myself Fatale. It's my superhero name. At the time, it seemed like the perfect symbol for my dangerous, sexy new self— a cybernetic woman of mystery. Admittedly, I was on a lot of painkillers. I'm a superheroine, gifted with powers and abilities above the norm. I'm superhuman, one of the good guys, one of the chosen. I got my powers by accident, a random tourist mishap in Sao Paulo. I was on life support for 4 months and unconscious most of that time. The corporate doctors came to see me several times during my conscious intervals. I was the one in a million accident they had been waiting for, and they were my last option. I said okay. I can see myself reflected in the curving metal walls of the crisis room, a patchwork woman of skin and chrome, souvenirs of a bad day in Sao Paulo. I'm in Manhattan, on the 48th floor of a midtown skyscraper, sitting down with the 7 most powerful heroes in the world. And I'm lucky they even asked me to be here. The heroes pop out at you, impossibly vivid. Colorful as playing cards, but all from different decks. A jumble of incompatible suits and denominations dealt out for an Alice in Wonderland game. A man with the head of a tiger sits next to a woman made of glass. The woman to my right has wings. This is where I want to be. The players.
So you write about all of these different characters. You clearly had a good time creating them. You were able to bring in just about any power you wanted, and you could create a team that was extraordinary. Who was the most fun to write about?
One of my ethics of writing in this book was to write nothing that I did not find fun. But I have to say, I think my favorite character is probably Baron Ether. the sort of supervillain's supervillain that Dr. Impossible goes to consult at several points. And he's well over 100 years old, so he's lived through more than one era of sort of of action genres. I love him because he obviously has this crazy past, and his body is so messed up from just a century of superhero action and being exposed to every kind of radiation or toxin or antimatter ray that anyone could come up with. He's a really sort of amusing end product to all of that.
You were unhappy about staying with just one villain. You seem to have gone into a number of them, although all of them were foiled at some point or other. I guess that's the basis of a superhero story, isn't it? The villain can't win.
I set myself certain rules in writing the book, and one of them was, yes, I had to trust the genre and follow its rules where at all possible. So yes, the villain does have to lose. That's a premise. But then it raises interesting questions. The villain pretty much knows that he's got to lose. So why keep coming back? Why fight that battle over and over again? What sort of neurotic compulsion is operating at this point?
And you also had a good time, because at the very beginning of the thing, the main superhero, the one who is your version of Superman, forgive me, is missing in action. Corefire, you call him. And nobody knows where he is or what's happened to him.
Yes, that's the mystery that sort of drives a lot of the action on both sides of the aisle, as it were, the superheroes and the supervillains. And I think that was a little pointed on my part, that the perfect superhero is missing. And what we're left with is sort of all the sort of more human people who are trying to scramble to figure out what happened.
So what is it about superheroes?
I really, really enjoy the way these stories are so often driven by trauma and obsession. You know, superheroes so often get their powers in a traumatic event, the destruction of a planet, you know, an injury. I look at it as sort of a two-sided sort of thesis about adult life, that we're shaped by our traumas, but we are also empowered by our traumas. And that seemed like a really rich subject to write about. And the superheroes, a rich way to write about how we become adults. So as long as you take the premise as read, I think there's a wonderful sort of literary world to explore in that.
Isn't it interesting, though, because I think that maybe, I don't know, when Superman was created, it was just because everybody really wished they were strong enough to make everything right and could fly.
You know? I know. When Superman started, that was enough.
What do you think it is about superheroes that people find so appealing?
It's always a sort of fun daydream, especially when you're at your job or something like that. You know, if I could fly, what exactly would I do? Or if I could turn invisible, you know, this day would get a lot more interesting. You can start there and go more interesting places. In a way, superheroes' powers become a metaphor or extension of their personalities. Like if you watch the X-Men films, you know, you have the character of Rogue who can't touch anybody without instantly sort of absorbing their powers and their memories. And it's like, wow, this person really has no boundaries. This person has like borderline personality disorder or something. It's just been sort of literalized and like pushed into a kind of superpowered world. There's so many interesting ways to play on personalities and how people interact by kind of literalizing them as superpowers. The genre sort of appears inexhaustible in a way. We're still generating new heroes and villains and powers as a way of kind of looking at how people are in the world. If you, as I always say, overlook the fact that we're pretending people can fly.
So these people tell us something about who we are.
Yes, I think so. It's almost sort of a staple of our media now that we've found ways to look at genres that we initially thought were a little sort of silly or were fairly sort of simple wish fulfillment. And wow, they really do tell us about who we are.
The sad thing about what you've done with Soon I Will Be Invincible is that you're telling us it actually is true. The superheroes win and the villains lose, and that's all there is.
Well, I suppose so, but there's a sort of, meant to be a sort of moral in the title, the idea Soon I Will Be Invincible. The villain sort of, like, it's sort of like Wile E. Coyote. The villain believes every time that he or she is going to win. Soon I Will Be Invincible, there's an absolute faith that this time, this is the invention, this is the scheme, this is the device or trick that really, really will make me invincible. And this time I really will take over the entire world. It's sort of my twist on Waiting for Godot, actually. That moment of faith. Godot surely will come tomorrow. So I see it as sad, but at the same time, sort of eternally hopeful. The villains have a very positive outlook about their chances, especially given the events. But that faith never seems quite to go away. It's the sort of driving narrative engine that is always there. So I don't really see it as sad. I see it as the moment of faith that keeps us going.
So if the villains, the supervillains, always believe that just one more try will make them succeed, I suppose they're not villains anymore, but heroes, aren't they?
I go so far as to hint as much in the course of the book. They're the ones who really have to face the day with a lot of courage. The superheroes, by contrast, are sort of smug, and they don't question themselves. They know that the fix is in. So yes, I'd have to agree with that the villains are, in a more realer way, the heroic figures.
Austin Grossman's novel is Soon I Will Be Invincible.